Luke. Luke.
Ben?
You will listen to the Wampa's Lair podcast.
Podcast?
There you will hear your hosts, Carl LeClaire and Jason Hunt, as they discuss all things Star Wars. So join the conversation and hang out. Oh, and watch out for Wampas.
Well, hello everybody, and welcome back to another exciting episode of the Wampa's Lair podcast. I am your host, Carl LeClaire, and we are huntless this episode, but do not worry, because I have some great guests. Let me bring in the first one. You know him as a Star Wars artist and a lover of all things Jar Jar. It's Joe Hogan.
Hello, Carl. Hello, Larians. Jason, I miss you.
He misses you more. But luckily, you know, for all of you who are like, oh God, it's just Carl and Joe again, don't worry.
Please, no.
We are offsetting all of the love that he and I share with the greatest cosplayer that I've ever met, and he's coming to us all the way from this frozen plains of Hoth. It's Jazz with Thor Kopacek.
What's up, guys? How's it going?
Oh, good. Jazz, dude, I'm so glad you're here because you've seen it 10 times. So you are...
Dude, it seems like forever since I've seen you, but it's been all of what, 3 weeks?
Well, since the movie came out, which was almost... it's almost a month now, so...
That's what it seems like, so long.
But I did not get to see you enough. I will.
No, it's true. You came. You came like 1 minute before the movie started, and you whizzed out as soon as dinner was over.
He vanished as mysteriously as he appeared originally.
You're like a force ghost. You were and then we weren't quite sure if we'd actually seen you.
I just like that Jazz was at the theater first, coming all the way from Norway.
Yeah, right? That was pretty amazing.
Got there and I was like, okay, did I actually get to the right theater? I was like, okay.
Anyway, you know, I'm not done talking about Force Awakens, and I'm sure we won't be for a long time, but I wanted to get back at it, and we are going to have a triangle table discussion in today's episode. So it's just me, Joe, and Jazz just gonna kind of just talk all things Force Awakens. And you know, Jazz, I've seen you putting a lot of awesome stuff on your Facebook about this. And I just really want to pick your brain because you're 10 deep into the movie already, and I think Joe's only seen it twice, so which is pathetic. But,
four.
I'm just kidding.
Four. This is important, Carl. Yeah. My nerd credit is on the line here.
Yeah, I know. Jazz, give me your initial thoughts, man, because you're a lover of all things Star Wars, and you're a huge Attack of the Clones fan. I believe it's your favorite of the films, right?
Attack of the Clones is my favorite. Crazy stuff, but yep.
Yeah, so tell me what you, as an insane Star Wars fan, think of The Force Awakens.
It's one of those unhinged fans.
Yeah.
Completely off my rocker. You know, the other day I actually kind of caught myself and I thought, I don't want to be an apologist. So I don't want to like talk to people and I say, oh, I didn't like this kind of small thing about The Force Awakens and I completely have to defend it. I've actually decided I'm going to be as objective as I possibly can. And objectively, I really, really, really like this movie. I love the movie. But there are small things, quibbles and stuff. We'll probably get back to those later. But the main thing that kind of... it's not something that pisses me off. It's more that it's like a wish. J.J. Abrams has made a really great movie. He's made a great movie for the fans that grew up with the movies back in the 70s and 80s that were probably like old enough to actually see it in the theaters. But it's kind of... and I know this has been all over the internet lately that, you know, he's basically rehashed episode 4. But it's not so much that. He's trying to recreate those feelings. He's going to recreate the feelings for a new generation. Because we're in a generation here that might not even have seen the first movies and might not even want to see them. Because they're like old movies from the 1970s. They're kind of outdated. People are like, oh, I don't want to see that. It doesn't have enough special effects. So he's created the same kind of story using the same archetypes in order to give a new generation the story of Star Wars, and for that I really commend it. But at the same time, I have this wish, insane wish, that we could see what George Lucas actually intended. Because when he sold Lucasfilm to Disney, he did actually include the first drafts of the first, or movies 7, 8, 9, we'll probably maybe get like a sort of making of book in like 5 years time, whatever, where they give us like, you know, brief outline, but will we ever really know what Lucas wanted to do with those movies?
Yeah, probably not for a little while, you know. And the thing I think is, I'm assuming that there's not that much of a disparity between what we saw from Abrams is what we would have seen from Lucas. And so far as the basics of the story, I mean, George was always very clear that the sequel trilogy was going to be about the children of the heroes and, you know, the grandkids and all that. So we are getting that, I mean, at least with Kylo and, you know, potentially Rey. So, you know, when George, you know, kind of had his not so, you know, his kind of his begrudging remarks in that interview, you know, where he kind of said, you know, well, the fans are going to like this. He kind of just kind of kept saying that it's kind of like an undercut to me. You know, it was like, well, it's just going to appease the fans. The fans will like it. That's just a fans movie. But, you know, at the end of the day, I don't know that it really departed that much. But, you know, that's a good point, Jazz. I'd love to see what he originally intended. And that's the thing. Like, I wish they could have kept him on in some ways, a creative consultant, which was always the original idea. But he made it pretty clear that he didn't want to do that. He didn't want, you know, he didn't want people disagreeing with him because, let's be honest, George Lucas got to the point by the, he was, you know, when he was directing the prequels that whatever he said went. You know, you didn't really disagree with him. So I think it would have been difficult to work too closely with George Lucas at this stage of the game. But
absolutely. But at the same time, I kind of think like when George Lucas made the prequels, he did something completely different. He did something completely new that had never been done before. Whereas with this one, we're kind of, to a certain degree, getting a rehashing of something that has been done before.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I think when he first made A New Hope, I mean, he created something brand new out of nowhere. You know, it didn't, he drew from lots of different influences, you know, from Joseph Campbell's mythology to Buck Rogers and Flash Gordon serials. But essentially what he created was something completely new. But let's be honest, we live in a time where movies tend to not be very original anymore. You know, we are in the era of comic book movies and reboots and remakes. But I don't think that J.J. rebooted Star Wars. I think, you know, I appreciate what you were saying earlier, Jazz, is it's more like he went back to what was that original feeling that people got from Star Wars, and now let's tell a story that conveys that feeling. And if you watch a lot of the interviews with J.J., he's very open that when he first sat down with Kathleen Kennedy and Lawrence Kasdan, kind of the question they kept asking was how do we want people to feel? And they kind of just started brainstorming from there up. So it was almost like the story was never number one. What was always number one was this idea of feeling and an emotive response. And I think that's exactly what The Force Awakens delivers. I've never been more emotional to any movie, let alone a Star Wars movie, than I have been with this one.
Absolutely.
But what do you think, Joe? What do you think about that? Do you think it's probably departed a lot from what George intended?
Yeah, I kind of do, actually, just because of that whole... See, I don't know. I feel like either it could have been pretty close and maybe he was just kind of feeling blue that it was maybe done better than what he would have done, or I think it's so radically different that it's just really hard for him to kind of reconcile. Either way, like I don't want to make him sound like he's bitter. I don't think he's bitter, but you know, when he equated it to being a breakup and, you know, you don't pay attention to what that other person's doing, you do your own thing. And he kind of, you know, he checked Star Wars Facebook. You know what I mean? Like instead of deleting her from his social media, like he went to see, oh, is she dating anybody else now? That's the impression that I get. That he just kind of wasn't in a place where, you know, he was really ready to surrender creative control in terms of, I mean, obviously he was ready to surrender it because he sold it. But I do get the impression because of all that, that it was kind of a departure. And I'm kind of in the same boat with Jazz in the train of thought that, you know, I don't want to be an apologist either. I've gotten the question I get a lot when people ask me what I think is, how do I think it compares to the other movies? And that was the same question that I was asking other people, like, before I saw the film, how do you think it's going to compare? And what I will, first and foremost, I mean, I know I'm the prequel boogeyman. I am avoiding every single comparison to the prequels, not because I don't want to sound negative or anything like that, but I think they're apples and oranges. You know, George's prequels are not the same as JJ's Episode 7 and Disney's trilogy moving forward. With that said, I do think, you know, I just said I wasn't going to do a comparison, but I'm going to do a very small one. I do think the prequels felt like Star Wars. I do think The Force Awakens feels like an amazing, awesome, really fun fan film. And I think every single film moving forward without George probably is going to have the same feeling. Now, when I say fan film, I don't mean that in a negative connotation, but let's face it, it's not coming from George. There were a lot of things in the EU that didn't completely feel like Star Wars, and they were still amazing. Like, they were still really great. Shadows of the Empire was not one of those things, but a lot of the video games didn't quite feel like Star Wars. A lot of things didn't feel like Star Wars, but were still really, really good entertainment, and, you know, were Star Wars enough. And that's how I feel about The Force Awakens. I think it's Star Wars enough. I'm kind of with Jazz, where, like, this little tidbits here and there, and I have my wishes for moving forward. But overall, very positive. But because the style is so different, it doesn't feel like George's. And that's just my opinion. I don't think if anyone else thinks that it feels like Star Wars, that's totally cool, because I think every single person should have their own idea of what Star Wars feels like to them.
I totally agree, Joe. Like, it totally feels like Star Wars, but it kind of upsets me. I never thought that there would be a Star Wars movie made while George is still alive and well.
Mm.
That's kind
without of him, you mean?
Exactly, without him being involved. So when they said that he was going to be the creative consultant, I was like, great, awesome. Then you find out that he's pretty much been either pushed aside or he's stepped aside, and that kind of, I don't know, it ground wrong with me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, I think I appreciate Joe, you know, you said Star Wars feels differently for everybody. You know, and I think if you watch The Force Awakens after watching the original trilogy, it has a more consistent feeling than if you were to watch the original trilogy and then watch The Phantom Menace, which I think is more jarring. You know. And I don't say that as a put down, but I think that's the honest truth, is that, you know, I mean, it's very clear who's making this film and which trilogy they preferred and what their right. Star Wars is and how they want to represent their Star Wars moving forward. You know, the prequels have a very clear direction of what the story is. And I think as a whole, the prequels, all three of those films fit together much more so than the original movies do. You know, A New Hope, Empire, and Jedi all have such distinctly different feels to them than 1, 2, and 3. You know, yeah, they're not the same movie, definitely not. I'm not trying to say that. But I think 1, 2, and 3, because it's all digitally shot and it's chock full of CGI, that makes it look more similar. Whereas, and
they're directed by Lucas.
They're directed by Lucas, right. Whereas, you know, 4, 5, and 6 all have different directors.
I don't mean to interrupt you or anything, but I also just kind of want to interject to some degree. I feel like a lot of people, including myself, that, you know, weren't maybe crazy about the prequels or aren't crazy about Force Awakens, we kind of get this forgetfulness where, you know, we hold the original trilogy in this regard, and maybe to a degree aren't completely objective because we wear our nostalgia goggles. But, you know, it was a long time before the prequels came around. And for us to expect the prequels to be what the original trilogy was, that was on nobody but us. Like, Star Wars, that amount of time is going to pass. It's, you know, the next films are going to evolve. They're going to change. And it's the same kind of thing with this. So anyone who is expecting, you know, the prequels or the original trilogy in this movie, like, that's really on nobody but yourself. You know what I mean? Like, they're all completely, even though they tell one story, they're still separate entities, and the times have changed. I mean, not for nothing, the times have changed a lot. Even though those films still hold up today, the type of filmmaking has changed a lot since 77. And even from 77 to 99, filmmaking has changed drastically. And a lot of those, you know, a lot of those leaps were because of George and you know, the innovations that ILM and all those guys have pushed. And now JJ is kind of walking onto the scene doing his own thing. And yes, he's trying to do an homage to Star Wars. But all of us who were expecting that original trilogy feeling, like, you you can't hold out for that because it's not going to be that. Even though they're giving us all the nods and stuff, like that's great, but it's not going to be the same. It's just not going to.
Did either of you guys find that certain scenes were too little otherworldly for a space opera?
What do you mean?
Well, I'm thinking, for example, in the opening shots or the opening scene where Poe gets to, what's his name, Laura Santecu's village, mm-hmm. It just didn't seem alien enough to me.
Hmm. There's something about that village scene, specifically just when he's in there, with the combination of the music and the kind of the physical setting itself, it felt more fantasy. To me, Star Wars is fantasy. It's not sci-fi. I would argue that with anybody who calls Star Wars sci-fi. It's not sci-fi. Yep. It's space fantasy. But that scene definitely weighs more on the side of fantasy than anything else.
The impression like certain scenes, certain settings weren't otherworldly enough for a Star Wars movie. Mm. I could recognize where they were from.
Yeah. Sure.
Well, I think, you know, I still... Not to settle right away into the quibbles, but you know, even the last scene where, you know, we find where Luke is and the first Jedi temple, you know, that Skellig Michael or whatever, it looks so much like, yep, they filmed that on Earth.
Yeah,
that was I've been calling it Planet Ireland.
Yeah,
for the last 3 weeks.
I'm not saying it doesn't look cool, and I do like it, and I like what it's trying to do. I mean, especially I think, you know, the fact that they're filming it where like an old monastery was. You know, I mean, there is a spiritual sense to that space, which is really cool, but it's still too this-worldly.
Exactly.
Even Takadana, it's still a little bit too much like this. I mean, right in, like, when they filmed in the Redwoods for Return of the Jedi, you know, I mean, it looks like Earth, but because the Redwoods are just like this very, very, you know, prehistoric-style-looking forest, you don't feel like it's necessarily Earth.
But I'm wondering if also part of it is like, you know, back in the 70s and early 80s, they filmed places that were exotic looking, even though they were on Earth, and they were exotic. But now that we've seen the prequel trilogies and we've seen how exotic things really can be, going back to something that's so earthly again is a bit jarring.
I get what you're saying, yeah, because if you think of something like Felucia in Revenge of the Sith or...
Completely different.
Polis Massa. But then again, to me, all those places always just look like fancy computer games. That's what I feel like. You know, that's, to me, a different type of jarring than the real set locations now. And honestly, like, and I don't mean this as a slam on the prequels, but I'd rather something look real and border on too this-worldly than something look like it's straight out of a computer game, which is whatever I think every time I see Felucia. It's like, yep, this just looks like an episode of the Clone Wars cartoon or a video game. It doesn't look like a live-action movie. So I think, you know, that was the thing with the original trilogy is that it kind of, you know, it skated that very well. It walked that line very well of giving you otherworldly locations, but there was a realness to them. Whereas I think the prequels, yeah, it's totally otherworldly, but to me, it's also very much computer generated. So I don't know. That's a good point. You know, speaking of that though, Jazz, you know, I was just talking with a friend of mine that was over here, and I'm curious to see if you guys have any angles on this as well. You know, remember when that first trailer came out? Not the first one, but I think it was the second one. I think the one we got at Celebration. And you have the shot of the Falcon flying into the, you know, Super Star Destroyer. And then there's that, like, quick zoom in, you know, shot with the camera, which is very much like a J.J. Abrams filming tactic. That didn't really bother me. It didn't bother me in the trailer and it didn't bother me in the movie. The only camera shot that I didn't like that didn't feel like Star Wars is when Kylo Ren walks into like the rubble at Maz Kanata's castle, and it's like the camera's tilted on an angle looking at him. I don't like that shot. I don't hate it, but I don't like it because the Star Wars never has shots like that. So it felt weird to me. I don't know if there's anything.
I've never noticed that. I'll have to check you when I watch again.
Yeah, number 11.
Yep, it's actually on Monday.
Oh, great.
I've got a screening all to myself.
Awesome. Wait, really?
Yeah. Talked to the guy in charge of the local movie theater, and he's like, organize a 1:05 p.m. screening.
That's awesome. Yeah. But did you guys find anything like that? Any of those like camera angle shots or anything like that?
I didn't like the closing spinning round Rey and Luke thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I actually think that the movie should have ended about 45 seconds earlier as the Falcon leaves the base on Dakar.
Mm. With them all waving goodbye?
Well, I just think it would be the perfect stories. Then you've got a whole group of people. We've got Rey and Chewie. We know that they're off to see or to try and find Luke, and they go off into distance out towards new adventures. And you've got like that crowd of people waving them off goodbye. Whereas what happens is we go and follow them on the very adventure that we know that they're going to do, and we don't really get anything out of it. I think that was actually mainly put in there so that we get to see Luke. Hmm. It wasn't actually necessary.
Mm-hmm. Joe, what do you think?
I mean, it's funny because I kind of had the same thought as Jazz once or twice, but I'm still glad that Luke was in it because it's Luke, and you know, they spent the whole movie looking for him, and I know it was just that kind of thing, but yeah, the purist in me is very like, why isn't everybody celebrating in that last shot? This is weird. But it was one of those things that was so different from what we were used to that it kind of all built together to give me the impression that, yeah, this feels more like a fan film than a, you know, a quote-unquote real Star Wars movie. And I don't mean that in a condescending way, because I love this movie. Like, I really, really enjoy it. I'm still going to – I plan on seeing it tomorrow. I'm going to be seeing it next week. I'm getting all those IMAX posters because they're amazing. Mm-hmm.
Where the hell did you get those posters from?
IMAX. Yeah, IMAX 3D.
The AMC theaters here are doing it.
Pick up extra ones for me.
I already have a few people that I have to pick up extra for, but I will absolutely give it a shot if I can.
They're beautiful, especially one of Poe.
Yeah, Poe is probably my favorite one, but yeah.
The last one
is pretty amazing.
Yeah, this one that's coming out this weekend is going to be great.
Yeah, excited. Blue
one?
Yes.
But
yeah, I don't know. I mean, it was just one of those things where I agree it wasn't totally necessary, but I'm still happy it was there.
Yeah, of course, you're happy to see it. I'm not saying that, but it's just saying like it would have been more of a Star Wars ending. It would have mirrored the end of Empire Strikes Back.
I agree 100%.
Goes off to look for Han and to look for Luke.
You know what else happened that in this that's never happened before? That first teaser that we got, 80% of those shots are not in the film.
Yeah, that's true.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't actually realize that until a few days ago.
Yeah.
Mm. Well, what do you guys think about the fact that Luke is the MacGuffin for the movie? You know, everybody thinks it's it doesn't matter. But yeah, what do you guys think of that? The fact that Luke is the MacGuffin that everybody's after. The first time that's ever been the case. You know, we had Death Star plans, and I don't know that there's ever any real. Well, I guess the MacGuffin of Attack of the Clones is who's trying to kill Padme.
To be fair, Luke was the MacGuffin in Empire for Vader.
That's true. Yeah. But did you guys think that worked?
I think it worked. It was just kind of jarring, especially the first couple of times that you don't see Luke until the last 30 seconds of the movie.
Yeah.
But it was really interesting that they did that, because if Luke had shown up earlier, it would have totally, like, the whole movie would have been about him. And I think this movie had to be about Han Solo. I mean, the importance of his death. Oops, spoiler.
I forgot to say at the beginning.
Han Solo dies? What?
Oh, sorry. Have you seen it yet?
No.
Oh, crap. But the whole point is, like, this movie was Han Solo's swan song. So it had to revolve around him. If suddenly Luke had shown up halfway through the movie, Han would have just been a sideline character. And it wouldn't have worked.
Right. And same with all of our new characters that we're supposed to, you know, start to care about. If Luke had been there, we would have just been obsessed with what he was up to.
Absolutely.
So I think it's smart that they don't put him in until the very end. And
I'm sure he'll have enough to do in, like, parts 8 and 9.
Yeah. Yeah. We're going to see him a ton in 8. So.
Out of interest, where, out of 10, what would you give the movie?
Oh, me?
Yeah.
I'd give it a 10. Definitely. I give it a 10 out of 10. What about you?
Joe?
I'm giving it an 8.
Okay. Yeah, because I'm around 8.5 to 9.
Yeah.
Fair enough. So. Yeah, you know, I haven't loved a movie in theaters this much ever, period.
Neither have I.
And I think, you know, I mean, it might have been different had I grown up during the OT. up to this point, the most I'd ever seen a movie in theaters was Attack of the Clones, which I saw. I can't remember if I saw it 5 or 6 times, but that was the most I'd ever gone to a movie theater to watch something for. Because I was obsessed with Attack of the Clones when it came out. There's something about The Force Awakens. I think what I loved about Attack of the Clones so much when it came out was it was just so fun. I could overlook the things that weren't as strong. But The Force Awakens, to me, is just such a consistently good movie. With Attack of the Clones, all those times I went to re-see it, I would, endure the awkward romance stuff because I was like, okay, because I know Obi-Wan's going to fight Jango soon. Or, okay, now I know this is coming up. Mm-hmm. But it was I always found I was enduring things. Not because I hated them, but it was get through this awkward scene, and then we get this great thing, and then we get this great thing. With The Force Awakens, I just feel like it's an endlessly good meal. You're not just waiting for dessert. You're being pleased the whole time, in my opinion. It's just such a consistently good movie. This is something I was talking about with Jason in our last episode, but I feel like the prequels, it's kind of like a greatest hits collection. There's a lot of great little moments and scenes that are a lot of fun, whereas the OT is kind of it's a great, very enthralling album. And I think The Force Awakens kind of has that mentality a little bit more so, that it's not just these great little moments. That's not a greatest hits album. It's just a damn good album. But that's my opinion. I don't know. Do you guys think the movie flows well?
The only thing that I kind of didn't like in the movie, as it were, is the scene with the Rathars.
Oh, yeah. I don't think anybody did.
The second time I saw the movie, I was like, yeah, okay, I guess they're kind of a bit like rolling Sarlacc pits or something, but I just can't get past them. I like the whole idea that Han Solo has become a down-and-out kind of smuggler who deals with really dangerous creatures and whatever, but the actual physical appearance didn't appeal to me and kind of drew me out of it a bit. Hmm.
The mouth reminds me of the First Order emblem.
Oh, okay.
Which is ridiculous, but it's just me talking out of my butt. I think it flowed okay. I mean, honestly, the last two times I went to see it, I had the same kind of attitude where it was just really slow during that Rathar thing. I mean, maybe not slow, but for me, the movie just kind of stops dead. As happy as I am to see Han, that's kind of the moment in the movie where I'm just like, oh, I can't wait till we get to Starkiller Base, or the fight on Maskinata's planet that I can never remember the name of.
Yeah.
Takadana. Okay. It stops a little dead for me there, but other than that, it's really good. The thing I find interesting is how many people are saying, oh, but this movie left so many questions. Yeah, man, it's part one. Everyone's like, oh, it doesn't tie up all the questions. It doesn't, the prequels had more character development. It's the first movie. Phantom Menace did not have, again, I'm not going to compare. Okay. I'm going to stop the train of thought because I don't want to compare
If we go back to the Rathars just 1 second.
Yes, please.
They get on that ship, or they get pulled in by the ship, which I checked out was called the Erevana or something.
Mm-hmm.
Why does Finn say that they're being...
The First Order.
First Order.
Oh, it drives me crazy. That does drive me crazy. And the Oscillator later on, too.
And it's a freighter. It doesn't even look like a First Order ship. So I'm have I missed something there?
Well, it sounds like he can only see, from the looks of it, right? The fact that he kind of stands on the console of the Falcon and looks up. I don't think he can see the whole ship. He just sees part of it and just assumes, I think.
Is he just totally, paranoid? Because oh, look, it's them. It's the First Order. Oh, it's them. It's the First Order. It's the Republic. It must have been the First Order. That's the only thing that I can imagine.
I think he's just paranoid. That's a good point.
Yeah, he's in a panic for that entire first two. I mean, really, the entire movie. He's in a panic, but...
Yeah. But I do love his character. I mean, I love all three of their characters. The new ones Poe, Finn, and Rey. They're just amazeballs.
Yeah. The bromance between Poe and Finn, I instantly fell in love with.
Love it.
This is wonderful.
Yeah.
It kind of reminds me of how... we all met at Celebration, all of us in our little Celebration group immediately met and became best friends.
Right.
It reminds me of that a lot.
Who's your favorite?
Who's my favorite character?
Yeah, Rey, Poe, and Finn, or and Kylo.
Hmm.
The new bunch.
I want to say Poe, but I think it could be Kylo.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Interesting. Why?
Why Poe or why Kylo?
Either one.
Kylo, because we had this impression, in a sense, kind of like Vader, where we thought we kind of knew everything on the outside. He's just this cold, calculating, evil dude. And then as the film goes on, he kind of comes undone a little bit. And by the end of it, we see he's really conflicted and not all there. And it just, he comes off to me like a wild card, where Vader was just kind of like, he had motives we didn't really understand, but now Kylo is just kind of like, we don't really know which way he's gonna go. So I think that's really interesting than a character that's all good or all evil. Not knowing what to expect is a lot more interesting to me. So Kylo is my guy.
Vader was kind of evil but predictable, whereas Kylo Ren is evil but completely off the hinges.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Who's your favorite of those of the new batch, Jazz?
It's a toss up between Rey and Poe. And Rey for obvious reasons, and not for the fact that she's really, really hot, Carol. Hey, Mr. Abrams. No, but just because she's like a great role model. She's not a great role model for girls. She's a great role model, period. She's like strong, she's independent, she's amazing, she's go getter, you know. I just love her attitude. But Poe's creeping up there, man. I really like his whole attitude. The fact that he's so open, he's so honest, he's so friendly, he wants to help out. He cares about everyone and everything around him. He's like, in many ways, he's the Leia, I reckon, of the new batch.
Interesting.
Without the cynicism.
He's very genuine.
Yeah. Absolutely. I love Poe. I'm hoping we see more of Poe as the series continues, because you don't really see a ton of Poe, but every scene he's in, he's amazing in.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's, you know, for all the reasons you guys have said, his character's so great, because he to me, he's the build-up character. He's the character that you just want to go have fun with, and you know he's got your back. That's the great thing about Poe is he does exactly that. So, you know, and Oscar Isaac just crushes that part. To me, all the new actors are phenomenal. And I honestly, like, I'm getting really annoyed with people that are like, Adam Driver wasn't that good. It's like, are you freaking kidding me? He's
awesome.
Amazing. He is the best. So when you talk about the fact that The Force Awakens might have borrowed some stuff from A New Hope, because, yeah, it does. There's so much originality to The Force Awakens, a.k.a. Kylo Ren is the most original character that we've ever seen in Star Wars, in my opinion, because he's immensely better than any villain we meet in the prequels, because Darth Maul has no personality. Count Dooku has no personality. In general, Grievous sucks. So, my opinions. But, you know, and Darth Vader is so one-dimensional, really, until Return of the Jedi. So, yeah. Kylo's the first time we've had a villain who's on his own journey towards villainhood. Now, granted, that's supposed to be the story of the prequels with Anakin, but it's so spottily acted that you can't really say it's well developed. Whereas Kylo, in one movie, we learn so much about this character, and he's phenomenal. And Adam Driver, I think he's amazing. He deserves an Oscar for best villain of the year. In my opinion, you know, because he is, it's the first time we've ever seen a conflicted villain who isn't put all together and who is flawed. And I think that's really cool. And that's obviously, like, Lawrence Kasdan and JJ have both been very open about, that was what they wanted to do with Kylo, is they wanted to introduce a new type of villain. And I'm glad that we're going to see more Kylo as the films progress. You know, that is one of the ultimate flaws of the prequels, is that we don't have a central villain. Yeah, I guess Palpatine, but not really, because you know where he's going, and he's just pure evil, so there's not much excitement to that. Whereas somebody like Kylo is totally new, and I think it's great. So,
yeah.
And I don't think Adam Driver's getting enough respect for how amazing he acted. You know, people are like, well, he's, you know, these awkward temper tantrums, that's part of his character. They're not awkward, they're incredible. They show how unstable he is. And that's why, like you kind of said it, Joe, he's a wild card. We don't know what he's going to do.
Yeah, I feel like he's the first villain that they're setting up for a very interesting character arc of his own, where Palpatine was, you know, we saw what he did and how he did it, but he didn't really develop as a character. We just knew he wanted a power, and that was it. Like, he was very one-dimensional. He was evil and loved it, and that's fine. Like, that serves a purpose. Like, that's totally cool. But this is 1,000 times more interesting to me, because all he really wants to do is figure out his place in the galaxy. You know, like, that's what he's trying to do. He's going about it the wrong way. Like, I wouldn't kill my dad if I was trying to figure out my place in the galaxy. But, you know, that's just me. Kylo Ren is another individual in and of itself. Everybody's different. But yeah, I think it's super interesting to see a villain who is so conflicted. He literally is teetering back and forth. Like, one, it could go one way, it can go the other. When he lured Han Solo onto the bridge, and I don't even mean to use the word lured, but like, when they were having that conversation on the bridge, I'm convinced that he didn't, like, it wasn't a trick to get Han to come closer.
Yeah,
he really didn't know what he was going to do.
Yeah.
Did either of you, like, sit there wondering the first time which way was actually going to go?
Well, because of the way they set the scene up, I knew that Han was going to die because, okay, here we have our heroes. There's no sound. And I also had a feeling that Han was going to die in the first place because of how similar it was to A New Hope. Han is the Ben Kenobi of this movie. So as soon as that scene kind of started and I noticed how it was structured, I said, okay, this is going to be it.
Exactly. It was just like, you know, you're sitting there watching it happen and watching it unfurl, and you're like, please don't go do it. Please don't do it. Even the third time, the fourth time, I'm still like, don't go on the catwalk. Don't go on the catwalk. But Carl, you said it really beautifully when you said in one movie, because Adam Driver or Kylo Ren does in this one movie what it took Vader to do through six movies. Mm-hmm. Has like a character arc starting somewhere, going somewhere else.
Yeah.
If you look at them like single movies, Vader was pretty much the same person every single movie except for the very first and the very last.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, I just think Adam Driver did a phenomenal job.
Yeah, I do too.
The acting of all four of them was just amazing. Really, mm-hmm. really
well. Can we show Finn some love? Because I feel like he's the only one we didn't mention. I loved Finn, man. I thought Finn was hilarious. I think he's our Winston Zeddemore everyman. To, like, all the things that are happening around him, you know, I love when we have characters like that where they're an excuse to explain to the audience what it is that the other characters already know. And I think Finn was the perfect vessel for that because he was funny, he was likable, you know, a little bit selfish at first, but as we went along, you know, he obviously grew very attached to Rey and turned it around, you know. I like that both Rey and Finn had their own hero's journey. Like, they had to refuse the call in their own separate ways, turn around, step over the threshold, like, all that stuff, that Joseph Campbell stuff. Both of those characters had parallel but separate character development in this film. And I think John Boyega is amazing. I can't wait to see him in 8 and 9. I hope he's as central to those films.
I'm paralyzed.
What? Yeah, right. Oh, no, I didn't even think of that. I hope he's as central to these movies as Rey is probably going to be moving forward.
That's pretty cool. Like, when I left, my mom said that, oh, yeah, and Finn, he was just like a mixture of Han Solo and Luke Skywalker. I was like, oh, yeah, in what way? She's like, well, he's like Luke Skywalker. He's going out into the galaxy on this huge adventure. But he's like Han Solo, as he's the outsider, doesn't really know what's going on around him.
Mm-hmm.
Just pretty true.
Yep. Yep.
But he was just hilarious.
Yeah, he's the funniest character we've ever had in Star Wars, I think.
Yeah.
And it wasn't forced humor. You know, it's not it's humor for everybody. Everybody could laugh at kind of at Finn's antics. You know, it didn't matter if you were 7 years old or 70 years old. When they, you know, grab Phasma and he's like, "Name's Finn and I'm in charge now. I'm in charge. Bring it down." You know. I mean, that's hilarious.
My favorite bit was like him grabbing Rey's hand all the time.
Oh,
you don't need to grab my hand.
Somebody made a really awesome little comic about that. Like, why do you keep doing that? I don't need you to protect me. That's more for Finn. Finn's doing it for Finn. He's not doing it for her. He's doing it for himself because he finally found someone, you know, other than, but he lost Poe. Like, Poe is his safety net. So now he's grabbing onto this other person and, you know, he needs that support there. Like, he needs it. He's going through a lot of crap. So
yeah,
I like that, looking at it that way. Well, he's not trying to, like, you know,
save her.
He's not trying to save her. She's not a damsel in distress. Like, he's like, we need to get out of here. We, you know, let's do it together, kind of thing.
But it's a bit like how he, when they're leaving on the Star Destroyer, is like, be calm. I am calm. Not talking to myself.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
And exactly the same way with him. He's grabbing onto Rey's hand, not for her safety, but for his own, like, feeling of protection and comfort.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, no, if this is the thing, you know, all these characters, all the new characters are new characters. And I think it honestly, and while we're all inevitably going to some way do this, compare them to like the original characters, because it's another big three, they're not the same characters at all. Just like the big three from the prequels, Anakin, Obi-Wan, and Padme, they're nothing like Han, Leia, and Luke. Mm-hmm. At least, I mean, Anakin's story kind of mirrors Luke's to a degree. And I think Rey's story obviously is going to mirror Luke's and potentially Anakin's as well. But, you know, Finn and Poe, they're not Han and Leia. They just aren't. Finn specifically is, to me, the most distinctly different character. Because we've never had a defector. We've never had two heroes' journeys in one movie. You know, and really there isn't. There isn't really anybody else who takes a hero's journey in the other films besides, you know, Anakin and Luke. So that's, you know, that's new too, who Finn's character is. So, you know, I really hope we see more of him, and I hope we see him go up against Captain Phasma in 8 or 9.
Please.
Because, you know, there was a lot of people talking about how originally they thought that it should have been, you know, when Finn fights the stormtrooper with the baton. You know, everybody was hoping that was going to be Phasma. And Finn would lose to her as well. Now, granted, hopefully Han doesn't shoot and kill Phasma because you want Phasma back. Because let's be honest, Phasma is essentially the Boba Fett of The Force Awakens. She looks great, but she doesn't really do anything. And damn straight. What's that?
Damn straight.
Yeah. So I really – Finn hates her. You know, that's very evident. Because she has so much control over him, and she's also a reminder of his past that he's trying to escape and get away from. So I think it'd be really cool to see the two of them go at it with each other, and I just think that would be a really great fight.
So. That bringing up Phasma kind of reminded me of one of my little misgivings about the movie. I feel like, I mean, I know they cut 40 minutes of the movie, but I also know that a lot of this stuff wasn't even filmed. I feel like it had a few too many, we'll tell you later moments. Like, oh, you don't need to worry about that. Don't worry about that. So the lightsaber was the big obvious one, right? Like, they literally say to the audience, oh, that's a great question, but a story for another time. Okay, fine. But we know Phasma's coming back. We don't know how she escaped. Technically, right now, we shouldn't even know that she escaped. Kathleen Kennedy kind of spoiled the beans before the movie even came out that Phasma would escape and make it out. But the last that we saw her, she was going in the garbage disposal. And then, you know, Poe had his own adventure. Like, all of a sudden, here's Poe. Like, oh, what happened to you? Oh, I guess. Like, it was a few too many times when the other movies don't really do that. Mm-hmm. The other movies are kind of firm believers in the show, not tell. Department, and I just personally have an appreciation for that, so it kind of rubbed me the wrong way when that just kind of kept happening. Like, it was just a little too often that, oh, don't worry about it, we just kind of had to suspend our belief and not really worry about it. But again, it's one of those things where I'm trying to just be like really patient about it, because it's just part one out of part three, out of three parts. So, you know, there's every possibility in the world that... Jazz, I think you and I were talking about this recently, right? About maybe there'll be a flashback about Phasma escaping, but that wouldn't really feel like Star Wars. But at the same time, they had the Force flashback in this one. So it's just, things feel a little off to me with that. I don't know if you guys have anything that you can think of where, like, oh, well, they could have shown that, but chose not to. But that's just something that I wanted to mention. Do you guys?
Definitely does seem very cut off short and cut up very abrupt. And we're talking, like you said, we're talking about that if they show it as a flashback, it won't really work as well as if they show it as a forced flashback. But then why would anybody have a forced flashback of that? So, I don't know.
Carl, what do you think?
I don't have an issue with it. There's some things that they kind of gloss over, for sure. Some of those bigger questions, though, I'm fine with it being part one that we don't have the answers yet.
Yeah, like, that's cool. Like, I understand that, but,
right,
you know, those other ones where there was no reason to delay the answers, those are the ones that are kind of rubbing me the wrong way.
I just think they shortchanged some of them, for sure. Like, Poe, you know, like, he quickly says, like, oh, you know, I woke up and there's nobody there, and, well, okay, great, but how the hell did you get back, you know? Mm. And I think there was some stuff where they cut that out.
Supposedly in the novel?
Yeah, it is supposedly in the novel. I am having the hardest time reading this novel. It's not good, in my opinion.
Really?
It sucks. Alan Dean Foster is a horrible author. I'm sorry. Like, I know I can be very critical of some of our authors, like I am with John Jackson Miller, dude who takes like 100 pages to finally tell you a good story. Once he gets to the good story, he's great, but it takes him forever to get there. But yeah, no, I was so excited to pick this up, and then I got it for my Kindle, and I think I'm on page like 40, because like, I just don't care. I don't even feel the need to pick it up and read it. And like, all the things that are in it that aren't in the movie, you can find online. The book's just not good. I mean, and when I think back to the prequel novels were amazing. The original trilogy novels weren't that great, in my opinion. I mean, it's been a long time since I've read them, but I never remember being that impressed by them. But the prequel novels were phenomenal. I don't know why they tapped Alan Dean Foster. Maybe it's because of Splinter of the Mind's Eye, which I've still never read.
I've actually read that a couple of times. It's amusing.
Okay. Yeah. He's not a good author, in my opinion. And I don't know, like, the great thing about the prequel novels is it really fleshes out the characters at least more. And I don't care if they don't tell us a lot of like the background that we're not getting in the film. That's fine, because we're going to get that in later films. But at least like, make the characters more compelling. And now, granted, I've only read 40 pages out of 240, so maybe it gets better. But I've heard from a lot of people that are very unimpressed. And you know, to me, if it's going to be a good book, you should make me want to keep reading it. I mean, I'll read like 5 or 6 pages at a time, and I'm just like, oh my god, this is not good, and I'll just put it down. I'm really unimpressed with the novel. So I hope they get somebody better to write episode 8.
The novel, not the
novel. Yeah. So, but that's a side note. And that's too bad, because the movie's so darn good, and it's not doing it justice. Let's get into some of the things you guys like that you really liked. You know, we've kind of hit on some of these.
Liked or didn't like?
No, we've done enough of the didn't like. Come on, we all love this movie. Let's.
Well, I was going to say one more, but that'll probably get me into trouble. Though.
No, go ahead. I want to hear.
I was going to say, I just actually thought about it now, because Carl mentioned at the beginning that I do cosplay, and the one thing that really bugged the hell out of me is the fact that the 501st banner is at Maz Kanata's palace.
Oh.
And that, I mean, I know why they've done it. It's basically like, you know, little hats off and little like, yes, we know what you guys do for the community and blah, 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 blah. And it's a little kind of thanks thing. They could have stuck that in the end credits, like, thanks to the 501st, whatever. Because seeing the 501st banner there kind of pulls me out of the Star Wars experience. Because that is something from our world, not from the Star Wars world. Do you get me?
I don't actually see it. I haven't seen it.
Yeah, I haven't seen it. I don't know if I know what it looks like. So,
In that case, don't bother looking for
it.
Okay,
I won't.
That's basically one thing that's really bugged me. Is like, you know, throwing in little Easter eggs like that for the fans. There's a couple of other 501st Easter eggs as well. And it's just like, it doesn't work. It's cool for all the diehard costumers, but it just ruins the Star Wars experience a little bit. So I just thought I'd get that off my chest.
Fair enough.
But what's some of the stuff that like really worked for you guys?
Number one for me was, I know this isn't his actual number, but I've been calling him this for like 2 weeks now, so it is to be TR-8R, the trooper with the
traitor.
Yeah, traitor. TR-8R is his like unofficial number. The reason I like it, so a movie like Ghostbusters, you have your suspension of disbelief is really, really low at the beginning, because you start the film in kind of at reality level. And slowly over time, you provide the audience with building blocks that by the end of the film, you can have a 300-foot-tall marshmallow man walking down the street and be totally okay with it. Like, yeah, okay, that makes sense in this world. I really liked having him fight Finn, because what that showed to me was that, okay, stormtroopers are trained in melee combat. That's why Finn is able to use the lightsaber. He knows how to use it, because here's this other stormtrooper who, you know, we essentially have two stormtroopers with melee weapons now that are fighting each other. And, you know, it's not like a quick fight. It's an actual, you know, it goes on for a little while, and Finn almost loses. So granted, it doesn't show that Finn is super skilled at it, but it does show that he's seen some training. So that when later on, when we see him going up against Kylo Ren, who's been trained in the Force, and even though Finn doesn't hold his own for that long, it at least says, okay, there's a reason we can at least have a short fight and Finn didn't just get his butt kicked the first time he ever picked up a weapon ever. So I loved that TR-8R fight, and I loved the purpose that it served to the story, because it's bigger than just, okay, we need to fight here. It's we're showing the audience that, okay, Finn knows how to use this thing, and here's the hint of why, because this guy knows how to use it too, so obviously it's part of their regiment. So I loved that. I thought that was a great addition.
Something for you, Jazz, that stands out.
One thing that stands out for me is the occasional amazing, mind-blowing, like, just single shots. And I'm not talking about whole scenes, but just single shots. So it could be, for example, when Rey at the beginning puts the pilot helmet on her head, and she's just munching away, and then you suddenly see that she's munching away in the shadow of a huge AT-AT, and it's just one of those iconic shots. Or the Millennium Falcon as it bursts through the snowy tree line on the Starkiller base. That's probably like my favorite shot in the whole movie. Or the ships as they come into landing on Dakar, when you've got that sort of the asteroid field ring that circles around the planet. I mean, there's so many of those like scenes and shots like that are just so beautiful and yeah. So Star Wars that, you know, I see them and I kind of like giggle like a little kid.
Carl, you're up.
Yeah, I mean, we're chock full of them. But, you know, there are some really cool single shots, and I talked about a couple of these on our last episode, so I won't go too lengthy with these. But, you know, the shot with Poe tearing it up in the skies, you know, once the Resistance fighter show up, you know, you have that awesome, like, long shot of just watching Poe, like, you know, crush his way through a bunch of TIE fighters. And then shortly after that, you have that awesome running shot of Finn running after, you know, Rey, who's being kidnapped. You know, that's such a great scene musically, I think, but also even just visually, because you feel like you're running with Finn. But one shot, you know, Jazz and I, you and I were talking about this a couple days ago, and, you know, like just kind of like these single shots that we really like. And we've done episodes in the past, Jason and I, where we've talked about like what are just some of our favorite like freeze frame shots in Star Wars, because there's some really great just picturesque, beautiful shots in Star Wars. And for me, one that really stands out in this movie is the shot of the Falcon leaving Jakku right after, you know, Finn and Rey have defeated the two TIE fighters, and there they are. They go blasting off, and you get this. I wish the shot was just like 3 seconds longer, because it's just a little too brief, but it's beautiful, I think, with just the Falcon flying off into the stars and the star field. Just, I love stars. I love space. So it's a beautiful shot for that reason. But also to me, it's awesome because these are our two kind of new heroes who are now, you know, like they're setting off on their adventure, and they're also, you know, to me, the star is kind of symbolic of great possibility, right? Like, reach for the stars. You can, you know, dance among the stars, blah, 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 all that stuff. You know, all that symbolic language about, you know, people's potential. And I think that's what's so cool is aboard this vessel, they're flying off into the endless possibilities that space holds for them. So I think that's a really beautiful shot because of what it says for our story, but just even just visually. And the music starts to kind of wind down there, too, because the music's been going, like, full on for the past few minutes as they've been chased on foot and then chased in the Falcon, and now we kind of get this moment of rest for a few beats, and it's really beautiful, I think. So let's talk
thought about, like, you know, I mean, everybody's been speculating about who Rey is and where she comes from and whose daughter she is and stuff like that. Do you guys have any theories there?
I'm firmly planted in the camp that she's Luke's daughter.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, I think so too.
My theory that I came up with yesterday is, let's see if I can, it actually ties into Ankar Plutt, who I hated, just because he's played by Simon Pegg. I just hate Simon Pegg so much that I hate Ankar Plutt.
Really?
Yeah, dude, I hate that guy.
Why? He's so funny.
He was funny in, what was that cop movie called, Fuzz?
Hot Fuzz.
Hot Fuzz, there we go. He was funny in that. Apart from that, I just hate him. Plus the fact that he's like such a prequel basher. And
so do you hate me too, Jazz?
No, I don't hate you, because I love him. He's just so vociferous about it. It's just like, oh man. And still he gets like to voice Dengar and gets
rid of the story. That's weird. So, that thought has also crossed my mind.
Well, he goes out of his way to bash the prequels, which I think is obnoxious.
Right? Exactly.
That's the difference. It's one thing if you don't care for him. It's another thing to just go out of your way all the time to just bash him, because it's like, shut up. Don't you have something else to do with your time?
My mom always taught me, like, if you don't have anything positive to say, don't say anything at all.
Yep. But I think it's interesting that you know, Jazz, that you hate Ankar Plutt so much, because you're supposed to, too.
Yeah, exactly.
He's a horrible person. Like, you know...
That's why they cast, Simon Pegg.
Jeez.
Anyway, though, my theory basically goes like this. Kylo Ren was conceived shortly after the Battle of Endor, so he must be about 31 years old. Rey, I read somewhere, is around 18, 19 years old. So that makes Kylo Ren about 12, 13 years older than Rey. And in the flashback scene that she has, like the Force vision, she sees herself as like a little girl, probably about 5, 6 years old, which would make Kylo Ren around 17, 18 at the time, mm-hmm. which means he could have already gone nuts in the Jedi Academy, killed everybody, then kidnapped Rey and dumped her on Jakku. And he dumps her with Ankar Plutt, saying, we make sure that she doesn't get off planet, which is why he gives her like shitty, like, here's a quarter ration and here's... I'll buy your droid off you because we don't want the droid taking you off on an adventure or whatever. But then we think, well, why does he want her on Jakku? And then my friend Tom, who I know you've met, Joe,
mm-hmm.
He's listened to the audiobook, and he says that in the audiobook, she is recognized by Kylo Ren when they meet each other on the forest, mm-hmm. on Circular Base.
Yeah, he says, it is you.
And he says, it is you. So he obviously knows who she is. And then when they have their fight, he leans over her and says, you need a teacher. I can show you the way of the Force. So maybe he has left her on Jakku for 12, 13 years in order to mature enough that he can start teaching.
Yeah, I think there's a little bit even more evidence to support that, just because A... I really don't think if Luke was going to be the one leaving her,
he wouldn't leave.
Leave her with Ankar Plutt? So yeah. So
and if he'd been abducted by anybody else,
mm-hmm.
he could have gone anywhere in the whole galaxy trying to find her.
Right. Plus, there's two other things that I think are very interesting. One, in that same Force vision, that one dude who, when we switched to the Knights of Ren, scene. He's carrying a melee weapon. He's not a Jedi. He's not holding a lightsaber. So that to me says... What's that?
The Kyozo?
I don't know if he was a Kyozo, but like that first dude that we see in that scene... That
the one with his kill.
Yes. I'm not sure if he actually is a Kyozo or not, but I know he has that hat. But the other Knights of Ren also have melee weapons. So it's possible that one of the Knights of Ren was about to kill young Rey and Kylo stopped him. And said, instead of killing her, I want to exile her. And this dude went off and did his own thing, and Kylo had to stop him. And then, before that scene, when the one officer is reporting to Kylo about, oh, the droid escaped, it had help, the stormtrooper was with it. When that officer says, there's a girl, the way Kylo reacts does not strike me as, oh, whatever, it's just tell me more about it. That was the last thing he wanted to hear. That he knew that they were on Jakku. He knows that Rey is there. He did not want to hear that a girl from Jakku is getting mixed up in this whole situation and screwing stuff up for him. He did not want to hear, oh, and also there's a girl with them from Jakku who's helping them. He did not want to hear that. And I, you know, maybe I'm reading into it, whatever, but I'm convinced that did not want to, that was the last thing in the world he wanted to hear. So that's my theory. Plus, Luke is crying at the end. I'm sorry. Look at that last close-up shot of him. His eyes get teary. It's not to see his lightsaber. It's to see his daughter.
His daughter again.
Yeah, and I think, well, then, you know, you got to run with the idea then, well, why doesn't Luke know about her, right? Does, I mean, is the assumption then that Luke thinks she's dead, you know, or what? You know, that's the only thing, you know, now we have to fill that in, because I think all that stuff makes a lot of sense. That she is, for some reason, exiled there. And good point that I doubt Luke would have left Rey with somebody like Unkar Plot. But, you know, why doesn't Luke know? Why is Luke oblivious as to the fact that his daughter's still alive?
There's that. Next time you watch the movie, look at what Luke is standing next to. It kind of looks like a headstone.
A headstone, exactly. I've said that since the beginning. It's like, that is so totally a tombstone.
Yeah, it could, and that's, you know, I've heard that as well, and I think it could be tombstone for his potential wife, you know.
Could be a potential wife, or maybe he's put it as for the daughter that he lost or thinks he lost.
Yeah, that's true too. Yeah, if you think to, you know, the Legends novels, you know, you have Jason Solo turning to Darth Cadus, and then he kills Mara Jade. You know, Luke's wife. So I wonder if, you know, Kylo Ren could have potentially killed Luke's wife.
Hmm.
Because for Luke to really walk away from everything the way he has, to me, it's got to be more tragic than he's just lost his Jedi Academy. You know, the fact that why doesn't he stand up to Kylo? Why doesn't he kill Kylo? I mean, Luke's probably plenty powerful to do that. You know, so to me, Luke has lost more than just a new order. He's lost something even closer to himself, which is potentially his wife and potentially his, you know, he thinks his daughter. You know, I mean, think about like in Revenge of the Sith when Anakin, you know, leads the attack on the temple and Padme sees, you know, the temple on fire and 3PO comes in and says, you know, yes, indeed, like Anakin did check in there. I think the point of that is to say that I think, you know, Palpatine probably wanted her to think that Anakin was dead. You know, to kind of drive a wedge between them. And I'm wondering if maybe something like that happens where Luke shows up at an academy that's already on fire, it's already being decimated, and he assumes his daughter Rey was in there and she's burned up, she's dead.
All right.
You know, so maybe something like that. So he gets there and he just assumes, oh, crap, she's gone, and, you know, and his wife's dead or something, you know, and Luke just kind of says, the hell with this, I'm done. I'm walking away. I'm more harm than good. So, I don't know. What do you guys think?
You know, there's so many theories, and I don't know if we're going to get any answers for another year and 5 months.
Yeah, I know it. And we may not even get them all. I mean, we probably won't even get them all then. You know? No. I'm fairly certain all of this stuff won't be resolved until Episode 9 comes out. But I think I would be surprised if we didn't get confirmation if Luke is indeed Rey's father in the next movie.
That we probably should get in the next movie.
And I think that we may get it earlier than we expected. I mean, think of it this. I was shocked how quickly they, you know, Supreme Leader Snoke points out that Kylo is indeed Han's son.
You know, do you guys feel about that, by the way?
It happened very quickly. I mean,
it happened quickly. It happened suddenly and abruptly, but in a way that increased the shock value of it.
I liked it. I think I was surprised how quickly it came about. I also wasn't, like, from spoilers I read and just even in intuition from the film itself, is you got to suspect that Kylo is related to one of them, to some of these main characters. So when that happens, it's like, okay, makes sense.
Yeah, I feel like they missed that opportunity to let Han be the one to do it, though.
That's true. Yeah. You know, I think it could have been, you know, if you didn't have that there, but you had, you know, the scene later where he first, you know, meets up with Leia again, and he says, you know, I saw her son.
You know, like, wait a minute. Like, no, I'm a father.
Yeah.
I feel like they could have done all that, even the scene with Leia, without saying it was our son. Like, he could have just been like, I saw him. And you could have had Leia just say, bring him home, and then you kind of suspect it. I feel like the big reveal should have been that bridge scene. Yeah. Like, when he takes off the mask and you see his face. And it's funny, because, like, I never really thought about it until this movie. Like, Adam Driver really does kind of look like Harrison Ford.
I don't see it, but I'll go with it.
I think most pictures, not so much, but a lot of the shots and angles in the film, like, they have the same, like, you know, the same nose, the same eyes. It's enough is there that it's like, oh, yeah, okay. So, I don't know. It rubbed me the wrong way a little bit. I mean, I know we're supposed to be talking about the stuff that we like, but you brought it up, and I wasn't super crazy about that, but different strokes.
Sure. Yeah, well, what about Snoke? You know, I mean, he's our new big bad. I'm not crazy about the way Snoke looks. I think he looks too much like a Lord of the Rings character.
Gollum.
Yeah. But I'm looking forward to seeing him in person, like seeing it in, not over a hologram. But what do you guys think? Do you think Snoke is like somebody running things behind the scenes, or do you think he's a more prominent character in the galaxy?
He's our Emperor character. We're not going to know anything about him until part three, I think.
I read somewhere that he is actually quite well known in the galaxy. He's known to the Republic, or was known to the Republic until they got blown up. So he's not like a guy that hides in the shadows, but I think he's a bit like the Emperor, that he's, you know, the head of the First Order, but nobody knows he's also a Force wielder.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's cool that, you know, Kylo is still incomplete with his training.
Yeah.
That's going to be so cool to see in Episode 8, the fact that, now, I don't know if we'll see any actual scenes of Kylo's training. We might, we may not. So cool. But I think it'd be cool. It would be cool because, one, we've never seen that. And also, they're not Sith, so it's not going to be the same thing as what you would see with a Sith anyway. They may have a different type of relationship. But, you know, Kylo seems to be very enamored with Snoke. You know, the fact when Han kind of says, you know, Snoke's just using you for your power. He'll crush you. You know it. He says, no, the Supreme Leader is wise. The way he delivers that line, it's like somebody that's brainwashed. You know, he is he's very enamored by Snoke. I think it's in the novel. I read this online, but I'm pretty sure it comes up later in the novel. But when Snoke is, like, talking to Kylo about Vader, right? Because, like, Kylo worships Vader. He doesn't worship Anakin. And the way kind of Snoke plays that off is, to him, like, Vader was weak. He was seduced by the light at the very end and betrayed his master. But, you know, it was like a lapse in his judgment, which is why I think Kylo is so, like, driven on making sure that he's staying in the darkness.
Yeah, he's worried about making the same kind of mistake that Vader made, in his opinion.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, from his point of view and from what Snoke has probably clearly fed him, you know, that Darth Vader was weak when he let Anakin come to the surface again. So, a very interesting take, you know.
I think it's also really neat that Kylo has this kind of the same power that Vader has. Because remember when Vader used to be able to read people's thoughts? Like, your thoughts betray you. You're feeling, you know, sister! You have a twin sister! Luke didn't say that. And I thought that was really cool that it was kind of a callback to that. Not only can Kylo do that, but also Rey can kind of, like, push it back to him. And I like that this movie did not only new takes on that kind of thing, but also added its own thing. I know so many people are like, oh, well, why did the lightsaber call to Rey? And why did, when she picked it up, did she have the flashbacks and stuff like that? Everybody seems to forget that every single Star Wars movie it's not contained of what we already know about the Force. It expands what we know about the Force. Like, every single time we see a new film, there's Jedi doing different things that we've never seen before. So, you know, we started out really basic with, you know, lightsabers and, you know,
mind tricks.
Mind tricks, stuff like that.
The fact that he's actually stopping blaster bolts in the air right now is just mind-blowing.
I love
that.
Yeah, it's so cool. And he can, like, you know, hold people in place and paralyze them in a sense. That was so cool.
Mm-hmm.
And drag people to your outstretched arm like he does with that officer in Monaco.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. You know, I mean, we're seeing all new Force powers, which is so cool.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, like you were saying, Carl, is that we might see some of that training in the next movie. It'll be a bit like we saw the tiniest hint of in one of the episodes in the Clone Wars where Dooku is training Savage Opress.
Yep.
Yeah. But I think apart from that, I don't think we've ever seen any dark side training.
No. You know, and so I think that'll be really cool. It'll be really cool to see that if we get to. And, you know, something that's going on, the scene when Kylo is trying to, like, force probe Rey on Starkiller Base, and he's like, you know, you're so lonely, you know, at night, you know, trying to sleep, you see an island. So that's a really cool, it took me a couple times after watching it to realize kind of what's going on there. But Rey is clearly having force dreams, just like Anakin, sort of. She seems to be dreaming about this planet that's just a huge ocean with an island. It's almost as if she's having a force dream about where she's going to meet Luke.
Is she having dreams about where she's going to meet him, or is she having dreams about somewhere that she perhaps has been as a child?
Could be either.
Could be either, yeah. Good point. So I don't know.
I think actually you're more correct when you say it's, you know, that she's having premonitions. Premonitions. But, you know, it could go either
These
way.
These visions you have, are they of episode 8?
Are they of an island in Ireland?
With my leprechaun friends.
She hasn't changed her hairstyle since she was like 5 years old.
Yeah, nice. I know. Yeah, that's a good point.
It ain't broke.
Yeah, don't think. Oh, man. Yeah, I think it's really, I mean, for most people, I think Rey is a lot of people's favorite character, and she's meant to be.
Yeah.
And kind of like you were saying earlier, Jazz, you know, she is a great role model character, not just for women, but for all people. And what makes her so identifiable is her character, because there's something about her character that anybody can relate to. It doesn't matter if you're a man or a woman. And I think it's so great to have that back and a character, you know. Luke was kind of like that. I mean, I think that's the reason Luke was an identifiable character for the OT is, you know, he's this kind of this nobody farm boy, you know, who lives a mundane life like most of us do. We just grow up and do the same thing for our whole lives to a certain degree. We just follow the, you know, the path of a typical life. Anakin's a little bit more unique. I think George went a little over the top with making him this prophetic character. I still to this day don't know that I really like that Anakin as a chosen one. I mean, the story could have been just as compelling if he was a powerful Jedi who fell to the dark side. It doesn't have to be some mystical balance of the Force, because that never really even gets explained in the films. Let's to be completely honest, what does it really mean to bring balance to the Force? George Lucas can't even give a straight answer. You know, so I don't know, but that's a separate issue. But I think, you know, with somebody like Rey, we have somebody who knows what it's like to be alone, who's afraid of moving forward because they think they have to wait on something else. You know, there's just so many elements of her character that are compelling. And I think it's great. And I love it all along. You know, she still just wants to get back to Jakku because, you know,
she's just like Luke. He doesn't want to leave his uncle and aunt.
Exactly. Like, you know, it's so important for Rey that she gets back there, even though, and I love it when she, you know, when Maz Kanata kind of just calls that out and she says, you know, you already know, you know, yes, the people you're waiting for, they aren't coming back. You know, and she starts to cry, and it's so perfect because it's like, yeah, you know, that's true, but it's just what she's always known. So she's afraid to leave that. So, you know, I mean, again, that's it. That's right there. That's part of the hero's journey.
But how about the fact that Han Solo, who used to make fun of Obi-Wan as being a crazy old man, and, you know, he has now become Obi-Wan. He's now the old mentor who leads her on her, you know, new quest from Jakku and into the larger world.
You know what? I'm going to argue that
sacrifice himself.
I'm going to argue this right here, because I kind of disagree with people that Han is the new Ben Kenobi. He's not, and here's why. He's not the Ben Kenobi because, first off, he's not looking for any of them, right? They stumble upon him. So Han is forced to change his plans. Han still didn't really want to deal with any of this. You know, Chewie, put him in a pod and we'll shoot him off to the next inhabited planet. Han is not Ben Kenobi. Ben Kenobi seeks out Luke and calls Luke forth. Han does not in any way seek out Rey or Finn. They find
him. He's seeking for the Millennium Falcon and finds him.
Right. But, you know, he's looking for the Falcon. He's not looking for them. So I think, you know, I get the fact that obviously he's similar to the Ben Kenobi character in that he's the old mentor, but think about it. He's not really that much of a mentor. When does he ever mentor anybody? He doesn't.
But at the same time, the main thing that for me at least is the fact that he dies much in the same way as
sure.
as Obi-Wan does.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I mean, although I think his death is more powerful than Kenobi's, because one, and they're very different too. Ben dies for kind of a purpose. He's drawing attention away from our new hero so that they can get away. So Ben is kind of Ben is doing that as a sacrifice. Han is trying to save his son. He's not directly impacting our heroes. It's not to diminish that. But I think what he's sincerely trying to do is he's trying to save his son. And it is a selfless act, just like Ben's was. But I think it's even more powerful because he's putting himself out there to somebody and he's trying to save them, somebody who's fallen. So I think it's really cool. And I don't know. I mean, like, I love Han in this movie, but I don't buy into the fact that he's our new Ben Kenobi.
No,
because I think if anything, the only mentor character in the film is Maz Kanata. Maz Kanata is that character that kind of invites Rey forward. She's the one who encourages her to try using the Force and tapping into all that. Han doesn't do any of that. Like, yeah, Han agrees to helping them get BB-8 to the Resistance, but he himself doesn't even really want to take it to Leia. I mean, Maz is the one who has to kind of reorient everybody's trajectory. Han is roped in. Not on his own, not by his own volition, but Han himself has to go through a transformation. Ben Kenobi never goes through any transformations in A New Hope like Han does. So I think it cheapens Han's character to just say he's the new Ben Kenobi because he's not. He's so much more. That's my two cents. I love Han.
I have a lot to say about that can of worms. If you don't mind a nice long ramble. I disagree with you 100%.
Okay.
And
tell me why you're wrong, Joe.
Well, I'm more than happy to tell you why I'm wrong. First of all, Han isn't in it to save his son. In fact, if you remember, he only really does it because Leia asks him to.
True.
He's trying to convince Leia, no, our son is gone. Our son is dead.
Like, as soon as Leia says, bring him back, I was like, no, you're killing him. But just saying that you're killing him.
Yeah. So Han doesn't believe it, but he goes through with it because he's hopeful. But that's not what his motive is. His motive is there to get Rey, because Rey is somehow more important to him. I also, that supports my theory that Rey is his niece and he knows it. First of all, Han is a mentor character. And I think when people say that Han is the new Ben Kenobi, they don't mean that he is a carbon copy of Ben Kenobi. They mean he is the mentor character of this chapter. And what we kind of leave out, we just kind of encapsulate him as Obi-Wan when we really shouldn't be. But Han is his own character. So he is a mentor in the way that Han Solo would be a mentor. So let's look at it this way. First of all, Han Solo didn't believe in the Force. Now he does. And he's more than happy to tell them, yeah, this stuff's true. So he is giving them information that's important for their journey. He also really takes a liking to Rey, and even to Finn to a degree, to the point that he offers Rey a job. Now, again, I also think this is more evidence that Rey is his niece, and he just wants to look out for her, whatever. But for whatever reason, he offers his hand to her and she refuses it because, oh, I have to go back to Jakku. Now, even though that's not her actual hero's journey refusal of the call that comes with Maz, which I agree 100% with you that Maz is more of a Ben Kenobi type figure, but I still think Han fits the mold for the mentor character of this film because he's there from the start and he's there almost all the way to the end, just like Obi-Wan is. And all of that stuff is just kind of overwhelming evidence to me that Han really does care. Han really is trying to push our heroes forward just as much as Maz is. Even though Han is running from the Resistance fight, he's still trying to do the right thing by our characters and help them along the way and teach them stuff. So while I agree he's not Obi-Wan Kenobi, he is absolutely 100% hands down the mentor character of this film. And he did it in a way that only Harrison Ford and Han Solo could do it. And that's awesome to me. It's something we've never seen before. And honestly, like, I think it was probably my favorite aspect of the entire movie was the way he took that role of the mentor.
Well, you made a great point. Unfortunately, you're wrong.
okay.
I'm kidding. No, that's no, that makes a, that makes a lot of sense.
Joe Hogan. There we go. And moving on.
No, that's a good point, though. Yeah,
the Yoda of this movie.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I think that's that's a good point. You know, Han does mentor, and it just that's a good point. You know, I'm looking for him to be a mentor like Ben, but he's not. He's not Ben Kenobi. He's Han Solo.
We're doing what Claire said we shouldn't do earlier on, and that is compare these characters to the old
right.
the old movies. So probably shouldn't really do that, but you automatically fall into that kind of mindset, right? You've got to think, okay, well, who is the Obi-Wan of this character? Who's Darth Vader? Who is the Yoda? Blah, blah, blah.
There's so many parallels, it's just hard not to, but it's at the same time, we're only doing ourselves a disservice by doing it.
And I think both of you have, you know, very good points, but I, of course, lean more towards Joe in this one. I think he is definitely the mentor figure of this. He does everything from offer her a job, offer Rey a job, give Finn a gun, take them across the galaxy, say, yes, I'm going to help you on your quest. I'm going to show you how things are done. I'm going to show you my contacts and stuff like that. And then he sacrifices himself, inevitably, because of his wife or ex-wife or whatever she is.
Right. Yeah.
But it's so when I was asking you if he's like the Obi-Wan, I'm not saying is he like the old man who's been sitting out in the Dune Sea watching over Luke Skywalker. Because in that case, I think that's what's his name? Laura Santeku. Laura Santeku could have been sent by Luke. This is going against my previous theory, though. But if we go from a completely different angle, and Luke actually did hand over his daughter to Ankar Plutt, the disgusting, venomous, horrible Simon Pegg dude, then he could have said, yes, my old buddy, Laura Santeku, could you watch over her? And here, just in case you need it, is a map as to how you can find me. And so that could explain why this guy in the deserts of Jakku just happens to have a map that leads to Luke Skywalker.
Good point. Yep. Yeah.
But then there was like conflicting theories about that from what I understand as well. So I don't know. I think everything will be explained in the next 5 years. That's about it.
Yep. By 2019, we will know all of these answers.
Yeah, exactly.
But that's...
Whole like what date in 2019 part 9 comes out?
Isn't it like it's May something.
I'm hoping it's May and it's not like December and we've got to wait 2.5 years.
They're both absolutely
they're May.
They're both in May. Rogue One will be the last winter movie, so which will be cool. So once you know next year when we get Rogue One, like 6 months later we get Episode 8. So
Jazz, are you going to be the first to our theater again?
Hell yes.
Oh man!
By the way, I mean, just to throw this out there, I mentioned this to Carl before. It's nice that the three of us are finally getting a chance to sit down and talk to it together because there were so many people. Even though we all saw it together, we were three separate tables. So
three separate tables, exactly. I was trying to shout across the room to you, like having some kind of conversation. You were saying something really, really smart, and I was saying something really smart back. It just was about completely different topics, but still.
I know. Yeah, that's the thing that kind of stunk. We didn't get really much of a chance to wrap up after. But you know,
I didn't realize your drive was like, what was it, 4 hours?
It was six because of stupid rush hour, and New Jersey is like literally the stupidest state I've ever been to.
Oh, New Jersey Larians.
I hate New Jersey.
Forgive him.
If you want, but I
move. If you want.
I mean, move is what I would say. Get to a state that doesn't like charge you to drive on every frickin' street. So...
What's so great about left turns anyway?
Yeah, I know. Oh my god, it's so stupid. Like, oh, you want to go to the left here? Well, you got to go 3 miles down the road and get off this off ramp,
and then turn right first.
Yeah, oh my god, it's so stupid. I hate that. I hate that state. But be that as it may, I thank God I don't live there. You know, I think at the end of the day, the success of The Force Awakens was it accomplished exactly what J.J. Abrams set out to do, and it gave us that sense of wonder and delight. And I think even, you know, and I know there are some folks out there that like hate this movie. And that's fine. You're welcome to hate good things. you know, but to say that it doesn't accomplish that is ridiculous to me. I will say, have you guys seen that meme online? It's like a little cartoon picture of like an adult walking into the Star Wars theater, and then they walk out, and it's a little kid.
Facebook.
Yeah, I mean, it's all over the place now, but that's exactly how I feel every time I see this movie. And that to me is what makes it successful, is the fact that you walk into that movie, no matter what your age is, and you come out, and that like child within you is alive again. And that was always the point of the Star Wars movies that George made, is, you know, as much as they were made for children, I think more so they were made for the child in all of us. And not because like you walk out of there and you want to, you know, disavow all your adult responsibilities, but for that 2 hours and 15 minutes, you just kind of get to be a kid and you get to be part of this adventure. And that delights you. I mean, I'm 30 years old and I left that theater and I was like, man, I want to go pick up some 3¾-inch figures and play on my floor, you know, but I didn't do that. But, there's something very delightful and wonderful about this film. You know, and there's so many little scenarios that it's like, yep, I could definitely see myself playing that in my backyard when I was a kid. Like I could run around my woods and pretend I'm on a Takadana or whatever, or, you know, when it's winter in the city again, you know, you can imagine being out in the woods and having a duel with Kylo Ren. You know, there's so many things that allow you to participate in this movie. I don't know. Like, it feels like you can play along. I don't know. What do you guys think? What do you think to that?
Dude, totally. It's like what I was saying right at the beginning, is that, you know, they've created something that creates those feelings you had when you were a kid all over again. The first thing I did when I saw the movie was actually I went out and bought a figure. Like, that was like, I bought a Rey figure of course. And now I want to buy more, and I want to sort of like, you know, wind them up and like fight against them. My girlfriend got me a Poe Dameron's X-Wing fighter for Christmas. I built that, and I've run around my living room just like, and I've used like the gaps between my couch and the wall and stuff like that as trenches, and I've like, you know, shot like little torpedoes and stuff like that. And it does create something completely different in you. You go into the theater, the lights go down, and you're in a completely different world just for 2 hours and 15 minutes. And it's magical. It's magical that just like images on a screen and music and sounds can create that completely different way of thinking for you. And I commend J.J. Abrams. I mean, yes, there were certain things that I didn't quite like about the movie, but there's certain things I didn't like about all of the six previous Star Wars movies. So there's never going to be a perfect movie, I don't think. But this is as close as you can get.
Yeah. Well, except The Empire Strikes Back.
Right, yeah, right. That's my
right, Joe? Come on.
You shut your filthy Norwegian mouth.
I don't know, Joe, what do you think? Did that resonate for you?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't really think I have anything to add that you guys haven't already said to that degree. It was the entire time I was enamored from start to finish. You know, we have our nitpicks, we have our complaints, but let's be real. In the moment, we're not on Earth. We're in that galaxy far, far away. And, you know, that was really all I wanted going into it. I wanted to feel like, okay, I'm back home. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So,
yeah.
I kind of remember, was it you, Carl, that said that, you know, the movie just filled you with emotions, and that's what a movie should do? Because it wasn't until maybe the seventh time that I actually managed to watch the scenes, you know, immediately after Han's death. So I didn't actually really know what happened between him getting stabbed and them fighting in the woods. I mean, not very much happens, but I was like, just tears were streaming down my face. I couldn't focus properly. I couldn't breathe properly. And it took me about seven times before I could actually focus enough to see what was going on.
Yeah, I didn't really appreciate Chewie's rampage until my latest viewing, which was my fourth viewing. I was like, whoa, Chewie. Like, for the same reason.
He went completely ballistic, like running down there, blasting stormtroopers left, right, and center. It was like amazing.
Yeah. I love Chewie's reaction, too.
Yeah,
you know, and think about it. You know, Chewie probably knows Kylo too. You know,
Uncle
Chewie.
And here's a question I have for you guys, because I don't think there's a right answer, but which is something I've been thinking about. Do you think Chewie was trying to kill him when he shot him?
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. I do too. Chewie wanted blood, man.
Yeah,
Chewie was the audience.
He would just go, like,
no!
Yeah. You know, I still don't know. I don't know if Chewie just shot out of reflex or if he shot to kill that guy. I think at that point, I think Chewie doesn't really care. I mean, that who this character is, all he knows is that this character just killed his best friend.
Mm. My friend's saying here, in anger to kill.
What's that?
My girlfriend just came in a couple of minutes ago and she says she shot him in anger to kill.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I think so, too. I mean, it was the knee-jerk reaction.
Yeah.
Whether it's the right one or the wrong one doesn't matter. You know, I think it's the knee-jerk reaction is you watch something like that happen, you know, you're gonna fight back.
I mean, if you think about how powerful that bowcaster is, I mean, if it were anybody but Kylo Ren, he probably would have been killed as well. Because he just got shot with one of those explosive quarrels to the gut.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And that's something that's... Man, that's annoyed me so much is when people are like, it's so stupid how quickly he gets, you know, beat by Rey. And it's like, you're missing so much then because dude is fighting with a gut shot after he makes pretty short work of Finn. And Finn does get a lucky shot in there. But remember, Kylo's already weakened. Now he's even doubly weakened fighting Rey. And let's be honest, at first, he's kicking Rey's butt.
Also, he just killed his dad, and he's not super emotionally stable at the moment.
Exactly.
So he's not fighting in peak condition mentally either.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing, you know. I love that duel. I think it's one of the best duels we've got in Star Wars. You know, I don't want to start doing the compare game, but but I will say this: I prefer it to every single duel in Revenge of the Sith. And I know a lot of people are probably freaking out right now, but I don't care. It's Revenge of the Sith is so over choreographed, and there's so many duels that they lose emotional impact. We finally have a fight with emotional impact. Anakin and Obi-Wan are supposed to, but I think it falls a little flat until the very end of that duel.
I think that one went on too long.
Yeah, exactly.
Otherwise, it would have maintained it really deeply in the beginning, and then by the end, it was like, the audience is exhausted.
Mm-hmm. It went on for maybe a little bit longer than it needed to, but it was beautiful, and it had to go on for quite a while because it was a fight between two brothers, two equals, two guys who are equally strong in the Force.
Mm-hmm.
But it did go on for a little bit longer than it needed to go on for.
Yeah, and I don't mean that to knock on Revenge of the Sith fights. I mean they're fine. Like, I enjoy them, but they're so over the top flashy that I appreciate the brutality and aggressive nature of the Force Awakens duel. You know, when you watch that, you know, the shot when Kylo is driving Rey back kind of towards the cliff face, you know, and his theme's going, and he's doing these like overhand strikes with so much force that it literally just like Rey's lightsaber is getting like thrown down, and she stumbles back at least a couple steps every time.
Did you notice a couple of her slashes and stuff were very reminiscent of Sidious?
Yeah, yeah, very so stabby.
Very
so
stabby.
Those stabbing
yeah.
ones?
Yeah. I don't know if it's so much to be a connection to Sidious as I think it's that's like a natural reaction to how you would probably fight with something like that if you've never fought with a lightsaber.
Staff before.
Yeah, sure. But no, yeah, I mean, I love that duel. And it looks so good. It looks so good. So, did the duel work for you guys?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, the fact that Finn was out of the game really, really fast. I mean, he stood up for a little bit. Most of his stuff was defensive. I think he had one offensive strike. Apart from that, he was just defensive parrying all the time. Mm-hmm. But it makes sense that Rey was as good as she was. I mean, the fact that she's got an innate connection to the Force, the fact that she's fought close combat for so long with that staff, it was beautiful. It was amazing. I loved it.
I do have a problem with her being as talented as she was with it, even though, yeah, it's kind of the same thing with Finn, where she uses the staff, and so she has some kind of weapons training, but she didn't get her butt kicked as you know, really quickly like Finn did. So I'm okay with it enough for now to suspend any real criticism for it, just because I feel like that could be one of those things that, well, we might get the answer later. Like, maybe she did have a little training when she was younger. Like, we just don't know yet. So I don't know. Like, I'm not really okay with it, but I am okay with just reserving judgment for now.
Maybe she had her mind wiped.
Yeah, I honestly, I kind of feel like that's a thing, because, yeah. I mean, just look at Kylo's abilities with mind stuff.
For certain things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I said this on our last episode, and I think I even said it the time before, so I don't mean to be redundant, but I love it, and I love that she's so good and wins, because, first off, again, let's not displace the fact that Kylo is very wounded physically and emotionally, but also, you know, Kylo is driving her back. He's not necessarily trying to kill her. Right when they've got their sabers crossed, and he says,
"Yeah, that's a good point. I didn't think of it that way."
You know, because you know, Vader could have easily killed Luke in Empire, but he's not. That's not his end game. I'm not saying that's directly like Kylo's may or may not be trying to kill her. I don't think he is initially. And the difference is though is when he mentions the Force, and she finally does what Maz Kanata said to do a while ago, which is, you know, close your eyes, feel it. It will guide you. I think that's why I love this fight so much, is because to me, it's not just Rey fighting from that point on. It's the Force is kind of using her as an instrument. So
she closes her eyes, that's exactly when she gets a connection.
So she makes that connection, and that is what gives her the strength to overwhelm a weakened enemy. So I don't care if she hasn't ever fought with a lightsaber before. To me, it's inconsequential, because it says so much more about her Force capabilities, and that's what I like. So and maybe other people still just like, nope, I don't like that, and that's fine. But I think it's really cool because, again, it's she becomes an instrument of the Force. The Force is just working through her, and I make that back to even right at the start of the fight when the lightsaber hilt flies past Kylo into her hand. The Force has made its choice. You know, it's going to fight with Rey, not with Kylo.
And I think, you know, going back to what I was saying about her mind being white, Maz Kanata actually does say, close your eyes, the light side, it's always been there.
Yeah.
So maybe Maz Kanata actually does know something about that. Maybe she does know that your mind has been white, but the light side is in there. The Force is within you.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so, I think that other thing she says can be pretty open to interpretation. Again, like, I know I keep pushing this agenda forward that Rey is Luke's daughter and, you know, this long-lost Jedi child. When she's talking about, you know, the family that you're expecting to come back is never coming back, you already know. But, you know, Luke can. The thing is, I think she doesn't really realize that. I think the wording of that is very specific because Rey has this vision of who her family is, and that's not who it is. Like, who she thinks is coming for her is not coming for her. But Luke Skywalker, Jedi Master, you know, this dude that the galaxy needs and who could essentially need Rey, that's another entity entirely.
So, and it's pretty telling that Luke is the first person she thinks of when she figures out, well, my family's not coming for me, but, oh, yeah. Luke will. Why would this guy that you thought was a myth until quite recently
come for you?
Yeah.
I think that there has to be a connection there.
Sure. Well, you know what, guys? I think we've talked this enough for today.
You tired?
No. I mean, we just recorded last night about it. I'm not at all.
Six over there?
No. But you know what? We got to keep just... That's the thing. Like, I can't wait to keep talking about this. And that's the thing. I really can't wait for this to come out on Blu-ray so we can really start diving in. You know, it's just such a different experience being limited to just watching it in the theater.
Able to pause it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, I can't wait. I can't wait to get back at it. So,
I want to be able to talk about it without being worried about the guys in the back row like kicking me in the head or something like that.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Listen, what I do with the back row is none of your concern, Jay.
But before we go, guys, thanks for being on. I appreciate it. And do you guys have anything in closing you wanted to bring up?
This was fun as hell. I can't wait to talk more Star Wars. I talked Star Wars a couple of days ago. I went out with a few friends of mine. We just hashed out some of the things, but now you guys are giving me more stuff to think about. So
you're welcome, Jazz.
Thank you, Carl.
Joe, you got anything you wanna plug for your artwork?
Right now, just kind of getting my bearings on my YouTube channel. So my username is Joe Hogan Art across everything on Twitter, Tumblr, DeviantArt, YouTube, everything you can think of. I'm on there as Joe Hogan Art. My last thought of Force Awakens is that I absolutely loved it. I can't wait to see it again. And I love how it's one of those movies that every time you see it, you find something else and or you think of new questions. And I feel like it's just one of those movies that we're going to just keep picking apart for a very, very long time until episode 8 comes along and we just do it all over again. And yeah. I can't wait.
Yeah. Neither can I.
And the big thank you to Jason for allowing Jazz and I to hop on.
Thanks, Jason.
Well, for those of you who want to stick around till our next episode, we have another poll going. What one word would you use to describe The Empire Strikes Back? So be sure to let us know that through our social media. You can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/wampaslayerpodcast. Follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/wampaslayer. Or always shoot us an email at wampaslayerpodcast@gmail.com. But I think that about wraps up this episode, another Force Awakens fun-filled episode. I want to thank both Joe and Jazz for being here. I love you both. Love that you're here. Joe, thanks for proving me wrong. I appreciate that. Jazz, thank you for being a gentle force of Norwegian love. Thank you, everybody, for listening to this episode of The Wampa's Lair. This has been episode 163. Force Awakens Triangle Discussion Board or something like that. I'm not as good at this as Jason, everyone. I apologize. But we will see you all again next time soon here in the Wampa's Lair.